Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly the films Wicked Part 1, Maria, and The Brutalist.
I'd like to start off today talking about Wicked. The full title is Wicked Part 1. So, good Lord deliver us. This movie is something like 2.5 hours long, and apparently there's going to be at least one sequel or second part or something. Anyway, I have to say I went into Wicked with a little bit of hesitation. It's a great big splashy musical, and nowadays great big splashy musicals don't always capture my affection. In this case, it's also a kind of a rehash of The Wizard of Oz, and that's a really old story. So I thought, well, I'm not sure I'm really going to go for this. But, you know, it really kind of won me over, and I'll tell you why in just a moment. First of all, a little bit about the movie itself. Okay, it begins sort of as the original Wizard of Oz sort of ends. The Wicked Witch of the West is dead. And everybody is very happy about that, of course, but that's only when our story is just beginning. The story takes place in Oz, the Emerald City, and it takes place more specifically, most of it in and near Shiz University. Not sure where they got that name from. And there we meet our main characters, who are a couple of young women, one named Elphaba and one named Galinda, who later on becomes Glinda, the Good Witch. And Elphaba is played by a black actor, Cynthia Erivo. She's really good. But her skin is green. She's green. This movie has a lot to do with minorities. It has a lot to do with equality, has a lot to do with kind of the rights of different groups and so forth. And one of the ways it signals that is by making one of the main characters green. And she is not especially happy with her greenness. Other people think she's weird because she looks green, and they, you know, she has trouble making friends and all that sort of thing. Our other main character, Galinda, played by Ariana Grande, who's also very good. She's very blonde and very pert and very cute. But they're both, you know, both young women, and they're both in college. And they start off as rivals. They're not getting along awfully well. Elphaba is sort of more of a no-nonsense person, and Galinda is more of a kind of a flighty, everything is about me sort of a person. But, you know, as the movie goes along, the two of them do become friends. And then we have all kinds of various Oz-type adventures that take place. We meet various other characters. There's Governor Throp, played by Andy Nyman, and there's Madame Marrable, played by Michelle Yeoh, and she's the head of the university. And we, you know, various people like that. Long, long into this movie, and again, it's roughly 2.5 hours long, so it takes us a long time before one of our other main characters shows up. But yes, the wonderful Wizard of Oz does eventually arrive, and just as in the original Wizard of Oz, he puts on a real great show with his arrival. There's a huge, gigantic face that speaks in a gruff, resounding voice. But then, yes, the real wizard comes out from behind the curtain, and it turns out to be Jeff Goldblum, who is usually very, very good, and he's just wonderful in this movie. A very, very, very likable portrayal of the wonderful Wizard of Oz, who turns out, by the way, this is not a big spoiler here, but he turns out to maybe be not so wonderful. He turns out to have a hidden side, which we get to know as the movie proceeds. Now, there are all kinds of other things in this movie, too. I will mention once again that it's very long. And so we have a whole subplot about the animals of Oz who are able to talk. In fact, one of the professors at the university is a talking horse, voice provided by the wonderful, a talking goat, voice provided by the wonderful Peter Dinklage. The goat itself, or himself, is actually sort of an animatronic kind of a thing. But there are other animals around, and there are bad things going on. As I said, this movie has a lot to do with civil rights, with equality and minorities, and the animals are a minority. And it turns out that they may be now faced with something pretty horrible unless perhaps our main characters, Galinda and Elphaba, can do something about this. So that's a very major subplot in the movie. And then there's various little romantic things that happen along the way, and the plot gets fairly complicated. Now, the reason why Wicked won me over, despite my initial hesitation, is that it is just dazzlingly cinematic. It is an eyeful. Yes, it's all fantasy. It's all make-believe. It's all stuff that has very little to do with the real world. Although, again, it does touch on some real issues, such as the idea of minority rights and so forth. But it's mainly just a great big splashy fantasy. But my gosh, it is just full of stuff that just captures the eye. I wasn't so crazy about the songs. Didn't capture my ears so much. But my golly, the colors, the shapes, the graphics, the motion, the editing, all of it is just so spectacularly done. The movie was directed by John M. Chu, a director whose movies I don't normally like very much. And again, I'm still not going to say that that this film is exactly my cup of witch's brew. It's a nice movie. It has an engaging story and all that. But mainly what got to me was its visuals. It is truly and genuinely cinematic. So if you want your eyes and to some extent your ears to be just filled with all kinds of wonderful things, then I really can recommend this film. I found it ultimately very, very captivating. Wicked, in other words, is not so totally wicked as the title may make it sound. Now, another movie, which has to do with music also. Again, Wicked is definitely a musical. Maria. This is a movie that reviews have been lukewarm about. Again, I like it. It got to be. Directed by Pablo Larraín, who is a Chilean filmmaker whose work I usually like very much, and that includes this movie. Lately, he's been making movies about women. He made Jackie, which is about Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis. He made Spencer, which is about Princess Diana. And they're both good movies. He's made other movies, too. A film about Chilean politics called No. A movie about priests called The Club. And generally, I find him to be a very, very good filmmaker. And I do think that that extends into Maria. Maria is a biopic of sorts. It is about the very, very great opera singer Maria Callas, a legendary figure in the world of opera, in the world of culture, in the world of music. And this deals with the very last days of her life, actually. In fact, at the very beginning of Maria, Maria Callas has just died. And then we get a long movie-length flashback that tells about the last time of her life. It's an unhappy life. She is generally regarded as the greatest opera singer in the world. Maybe the greatest opera singer who ever lived, although, of course, before recordings came along, we can't judge those earlier opera singers. But she was tremendously great, but she had all kinds of problems. And in her very latest days, we see her dealing with a drug problem. It's prescription medications and all that. But yes, drugs are an issue with her. She has problems with that. Sometimes she feels she is hallucinating. And we see various things in the movie which appear to be flashbacks to her movie career, her music career, which may just be that, flashbacks to her music career, but they may be also hallucinations which she is having because she complains of having these hallucinations, and apparently they're very real for her. We see her dealing with men in her life, especially her husband. She was married to another man when she got involved with, I'll mention it second time, Aristotle Onassis, who, of course, was the wife of Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, but he was also the lover of Maria Callas for a long time. So he becomes a secondary character in this movie. And there are various other people who pass through her lives, including a doctor who would like very much to help save her, to get her off of her drugs and so forth, and to make her realize that her health situation is far more perilous than she maybe recognizes. But she doesn't seem interested in that. She seems to feel that she has reached the end of her life and that maybe it's right that she has reached the end of her life. She has vowed that she will never perform again. And, well, it's a sad story, as I said. Now, Maria, the movie, hinges very largely on the main character, Maria Callas, who is played by Angelina Jolie. She is really good. She manages to give a strong, mournful, but never morbid performance as this old, famous, dying artist. And I think it's a very impressive performance. Not a performance for the ages, but it's really, really solid. And it really shows Angelina Jolie to be fully in command of her art and her craft at this stage of her career. It's a very, very good performance, I think. Maria is a bit long also. It's only about 2 hours, short compared with Wicked. But it's, you know, it's long and it's slow and it's very, very dark. I mean, visually dark. You have to sort of squint sometimes to make out what's going on. But I found that to be appropriate to the subject matter as well. It's a dark movie with a dark subject, but not a mournful subject, not a melancholy subject, just sort of a sad subject. And it really eventually really took me in. I enjoyed it quite a lot. I think it's a good, good, serious movie. And it's also a movie about high culture, and we don't really get enough of those in today's very, very pop culture-oriented movie world. So I don't think that Maria is a great movie, but I think it's a very, very good movie, and I hope people go to see it because I want to see more movies be made about music and opera and high culture in general. Finally, another movie which deals, I guess, with high culture because it's about architecture, The Brutalist. This movie is getting mentioned all over the place now as a very possible contender for Best Picture in the Oscar race. Well, maybe so. I don't really think it deserves that. It's a very impressive movie in certain ways, but it's not a movie that really took me in. Eventually, Wicked really won me over, and Maria, almost from the beginning, really won me over. The Brutalist never quite won me over, and this one's really long. It's about 3.5 hours, which includes an intermission, fortunately, but it's really, really long. You have to be ready to settle in to The Brutalist, which, by the way, was made by Brady Corbett, whose previous films have been much more modest. This is a huge movie in every way, and I have to say, Brady Corbett really knows how to make a huge movie. I don't think it's a great movie, but it certainly is a big one. So, The Brutalist stars Adrian Brody in a very, very solid, strong performance as an architect. And at the very beginning of the movie, he migrates from Hungary, where he just barely gets away from the Holocaust and World War II, and makes it to America, going past the Statue of Liberty in steerage, emerging and living a very, very hardscrabble life. Back in Hungary, he was a licensed and notable architect. In America, he is completely unknown. So he has to do menial jobs and just sort of scrape together a living any way he can. Then he goes to do some work with a relative of his who runs a furniture shop. And so he designs and sells furniture. Then he and his furniture designing and selling relative get a job to remodel the library in the mansion of a very, very rich man. They do it. The very, very rich man is away. This is a surprise for him, engineered by his son. The very, very rich man comes, he played, by the way, by Guy Pearce, comes back, sees what the architect has done with his library, and is outraged. He hates it. He despises it. And he sends the architect away and says never again and doesn't even want to pay him. However, somehow or other, an architectural magazine gets wind of what's been done. They come and they look at it, and they declare it to be great. So now the very, very rich man decides, well, I guess it must be great. So he comes back to the architect and hires him for a very big job. He has commissioned the building of a community center, which is going to be a very ambitious project, including all kinds of different facilities, and he hires the architect to do this. The architect, by the way, by now, along with an African-American friend of his, has become a heroin addict. So there's a big drug subplot in this movie, as there is in Maria as well. So certain things are coming up a lot at the movies these days. In any case, much of The Brutalist, which takes its name from a style of architecture, is about the building of this huge community center, the terrible things that go wrong. There's a train crash that destroys all sorts of materials and kills people, and all kinds of things go wrong, but eventually we see the architect finally getting the job done. And by the end of the movie, he is an honored architect in America. So that's very nice to see. As I said, The Brutalist movie is a very, very large movie. It's an unbelievably ambitious movie. You have to go back, I think, a few decades to find a movie just as nakedly ambitious as The Brutalist. It takes on a big, big theme, more than one big theme, actually. It takes on a whole architectural movement, brutalism in architecture. It takes on all kinds of things, and it tells a very human and personal story, too. In addition to the main character played by Adrian Brody, he misses his wife desperately. She's still back in Hungary. She eventually gets to America, played by Felicity Jones. And then they have a younger niece who seems to be a very eccentric woman, young woman, and she eventually comes along, too. And so we have these various characters interacting in various ways all the while this gigantic architectural project is going on. So, It is very possible that The Brutalist will win major Academy Awards, maybe Best Picture. That happens all the time, and I don't especially believe in the Academy Awards. I don't much like them. But The Brutalist is certainly a contender. I wish that Maria would be a contender. Maybe Wicked will be a contender when we finally get around to the races it's eventually going to come out. The Brutalist, I respect it enormously for its tremendous ambition and for fulfilling a large part of that ambition. I also think that Adrian Brody gives a very fine performance. But ultimately, it's much longer than it needs to be, it's much more stretched out than it needs to be, and it loses momentum because of that. And that, I think, is its big failing. So The Brutalist, as I often say, a good movie, but certainly not a great movie. We'll see what happens when the Oscar race gets underway in earnest. In the meanwhile, that is my, I hope, not very brutal story this week.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films Wicked Part 1, Maria, and The Brutalist.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.